Salvi into left center field, yes. And that's going to roll deep. So Witt will score. Santana will stop at third. Salvador Perez has an RBI double. So it's 1-0 Royals.
And that was really the highlight for the Royals last night. The first inning, couple of runs, but then do nothing the rest of the game offensively. Mike Matheny on the lack of offense from his team last night. Royals lose to the Tigers 4-2. They are now 16-19, losers of 10 in a row.
Trying to generate offense, make something happen. Love the way we came out of the gate offensively and take advantage of the hit fast and Sally coming up big for us. Situational hitting by Benny. Those are the kind of things that we talk a lot about. But yeah, it's been a shame not to put much more against him, even though we were some deeper counts.
So the Royals, they lose again, and quite honestly, they got to spice it up. And I've got some ideas what they can do, especially trying to get their starting pitchers to go deeper in games.
Well, Nuke's scared because his eyelids are jammed and his old man's here. We need a live, was there a live rooster? We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present. Is that about right?
That's right. Okay, well, candlesticks always make a nice gift, and maybe you can find out where she's registered, maybe a place setting or maybe a silverware pattern. Okay, let's get to it. Here we go.
Tanya, that's what the Royals need. What's the movie, Dusty?
That's Bull Durham.
There you go. Good job. That was a clip I used for Name That Movie earlier today on Waterside Wake Up. Yes, so whatever it takes for the Royals to get going. Some really alarming statistics for the Royals as they do lose last night 4-2, just three hits in the ball game. And Salvi with two of those, and Lopez with the other. Duffy last night, really not bad, but for him, not good. Six innings, four runs, seven hits, struck out eight, walked two. But the offense has been an issue. You heard Mike Matheny, they're kind of pressing at times, no doubt, when you're trying to break a losing streak. That makes sense. But there are some really disturbing numbers for the Royals. First of all, the losing streak is now at 10. That's the 12th time in franchise history they have lost 10 or more games in a row. That's not good. Two runs on one hit in the first, two hits the last eight innings of the game. The Royals are hitting just 188 with runners in scoring position over their 10-game losing streak. The Royals have been outscored 70-30 over the past 10 games. And do you know, I saw the other day that the Royals have only had a one starting pitcher get into the seventh inning this year?
Yeah, it's not good.
So your bullpen's always having to pitch three or four innings, if not more. Yeah. In fact, the average length of starting pitching this year for the Royals through 35 games, you know what the average amount of innings the starters are averaging per game for start?
4 2/3.
Oh, you're very optimistic. 3 2/3.
Wow.
That's the average until last night.
That 4 2/3 is not good.
No, 3 2/3 is worse.
That's terrible.
Well, you know, Keller had the horrible outings. Yeah. Lynch went two-thirds of an inning. And now tonight you're depending on a guy that hasn't pitched above A-ball, Daniel Lynch, their top pitching prospect, to go out and stop a 10-game skid tonight. And last time out, he didn't even get out of the first inning. Not sounding like the Royals are going to snap the skid tonight. But we could be wrong, or excuse me, this afternoon, 12-10 afternoon game. Maybe that's what the Royals need. It's amazing how just recently Royals went to Detroit and swept four, and we joked about how now they'll get swept by Detroit in Detroit, and here we are. They're one game away from being swept. It's really sad is what all of this is. And then they play again tomorrow at the White Sox, who are red hot. So the White Sox now have a 5.5-game lead over the Royals, and just a few weeks ago the Royals had the best record in baseball, and they're up three games. That's what a 10-game losing streak will do to you. And then the team that gets hot in your division in conjunction with your losing streak and they beat you head-to-head and sweep you at home, that tends to cause problems. And you look at the Royals. If they don't win today against Detroit, that would be 11. Tomorrow at the White Sox, they're playing great. 12, 13, 14. We could be looking at a 14, 15-game losing streak.
Yeah.
Where's it going to end?
I don't know. It's going to end when the Royals decide to do something offensively for me.
Because the Royals are going to play two tomorrow. They're going to play at 2:10, and they're going to play at 7:10. So they're going to play a doubleheader tomorrow against the White Sox. Their starting pitching can't even Duffy's really the one guy that can give you at least six innings. Mm-hmm. Junis could, but then they put him to the bullpen, which we've talked about that. And then Saturday, they don't even know who they're going to start Saturday. And Sunday, they don't know who they're going to start. So they've got a four-game set with the White Sox. And that's the team they're chasing. And then right after the White Sox, the Brewers come to town. The Brewers are playing good ball above 500. So, I mean, where does this thing... It doesn't look promising. It's amazing how we went from very promising to what's wrong with the Royals. I will say, though, there were signs that we should have maybe seen. One, the Royals were scrounging out one-run games and barely winning, and Salvador Perez was doing his heroics. But we had talked about how the offense would sputter at times during that whole thing. But if without Salvador Perez, the Royals would have been, I think they figured out that one time he won them four games. So remember, he threw a guy out the end of the game at third base. I mean, Salvi won them four games. Without Salvi, they would have been, I think at the time they were talking about how the Royals would have been 9-13 instead of 13-9 or whatever the record was at the time. So maybe they're coming down to earth. Obviously they are. They're crashing down to earth. Yeah. They've lost the sense of gravity, and they're trying to get back up and figure something out. But, yeah, the numbers are bad. You want more bad numbers? Of course you do. Of the 86 qualified hitters in the American League, there's 86 qualified hitters in the American League. OPS is on-base percentage, which is important. Get on base, that's important. Plus slugging percentage, which means, you know, you're getting extra base hits, home runs, you're driving in runs. 86 qualified hitters, the Royals have four of the bottom 20 in their lineup. Jorge Soler, Michael A. Taylor, Soler 67th at 86 in OPS, Taylor 69th in OPS, which no surprise there. He doesn't walk. Yeah. We knew that. Nicky Lopez 70th at 86, and he should be in the minors if Mondesi wasn't hurt. And 79th is a guy they just gave a lot of money to, Hunter Dozier, in the offseason. He is 79th out of 86 on OPS, which means they're not getting on base and they're not slugging. They're not hitting guys in. And if you counted Hanser Alberto into the equation, he doesn't have apparently enough at bats, he would be five of the Royals players would be in the bottom 20 in OPS.
Yeah.
I'm just going to throw it out there and go out on a limb. That's not good.
No.
Of course, the bottom line, the biggest number is 10 losses in a row for the Royals. When do the Chiefs start their season? Oh, hey, we're going to have that answer coming up in a little bit. If you're a Chiefs and Royals fan, Chiefs season can't start soon enough after a few weeks ago thinking, hey, the Royals might make the playoffs and what a year it'll be. Hey, the Royals could easily, in 2 weeks, win 8 out of 9. It's possible. But the signs aren't there, especially with the pitching. And then the offense. The Royals got all kinds of problems. It isn't just one thing. I think the offense is a big problem right now, no question. I think it is the number one problem for this team, and they're pressing. But the starting pitching, if they keep going 3 2/3, 4 1/3 in an average start, that bullpen is going to start. I mean, the bullpen hasn't been great this year. The bullpen's going to fall apart. You just can't wear out your arms in the bullpen. You got to get more out of your starting pitching. And that was a concern. Ryan LaFever said it before the season with us on this very show on the Sports Ticket. Ryan LaFever, the voice of Royals, said his biggest concern was starting pitching. That was his biggest concern. He liked the lineup. He liked the bullpen. He was concerned about starting pitching. And he went through every single one of them. And he had concerns about every one of them.
Oh, yeah.
So here we are.
I don't think anybody expected Brad Keller to be this bad, though.
No.
So that doesn't help.
No. I don't think anybody expected Dan Duffy to be that good either.
No, for a stretch,
in fairness. But it is what it is. All right, local sports, Dusty. We got Athlete of the Week.
Yes, Blewett sophomore Grady Seifert has been named the NCSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week, as he has been dominant of late in field events that he competes for the Trojan track and field team. On the last three meets, he swept the gold medals in the throwing events that he does, the discus and shot put. This past Thursday, May 6th, Riley County Invitational at Valley Heights, he won that with a career best throw in the discus of 162 feet 7 inches, took gold in the shot put at 48.6 1/4. In Minneapolis on Tuesday, May 4th, he won the discus 152.6 in the shot at 48.10 1/2, and also claimed gold in both of those events at the Beloit Relays on April 30th. And the discus and shot put. And then his season best shot put mark was 50 feet 11 1/2 inches at Phillipsburg on April 23rd, where he claimed the silver medal in the 7 events for Beloit so far this season. Seifert has brought home 14 medals. He claimed gold 5 times in the discus and 4 times in the shot put. So again, congratulations to Grady Seifert, our NCCastSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. If you'd like to nominate an athlete of the week, visit NCCastSports.com for more information. Also in local sports, schedule coming up here today for high school sports track and field, the NPL League meet at Mankato. Pole vault starts at 2:30, field events, the rest of the field events at 3, and then the track events start at 4:30 here this afternoon in Mankato. Mid-Continent League meet in Hill City. Smith Center competing there at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Smith Center boys golf is at the MCL meet in Hayes at 1 o'clock today, and then Chapman at Concordia today in high school baseball and softball. Both doubleheaders start at 4:30. So that's a look at what's going on in today's action. Also yesterday, the baseball and softball regional brackets were released by the Kansas State High School Activities Association. You can find all that information at ncksports.com. In 3A baseball, TMP will be hosting the regional. First round games are at the higher seeds. So Beloit, the number 8 seed at 4-16, will be at number 1 seed Larned, who's 15-4. That's Monday, May 17th, is coming Monday at 6 o'clock there in Larned. And then also the 7 seeds, Lincoln, Sylvan, Lucas, 5-11, will be at 2 seed Minneapolis, who's 12-6 on Monday at 5 o'clock in baseball action. And then the softball regional will be at Larned for the 3A teams, and everything will be there at Larned. First round games, Beloit's number 3 seed, 16-4 against 6 seed TMP, who's 8-10. They'll play Monday at 1 o'clock in Larned, and then our other local team in that regional will be Sylvan Lucas Lincoln, the number 4 seed at 13-7, and they'll take on the 5 seed Ellis, who's 11-9. That'll be Monday at 4 o'clock in Larned. So that's a look at where our area teams are playing for regional baseball and softball, and you can find complete brackets for all of those teams at ncksports.com for regional baseball and softball beginning next Monday for most baseball and softball teams in the state. Some of those will be starting on Tuesday. Most of them are going to go Monday and then finish up on actually Wednesday with the championship games in a lot of those tournaments. And again, you can find all that information and all the brackets at ncksports.com for regional baseball and softball. And we gave you the baseball matchups there at TMP. Other teams that are in that regional include Russell, Victoria, TMP, Hoisington Central Plains, and Ellsworth. And then in softball regional, along with Beloit and Sylvan Lucas Lincoln that we mentioned, other teams there at Hoisington Central Plains, Plainville, Stockton, Russell, Victoria, and Larned. So let's look at all the teams that are competing in those regionals coming up next week. So we'll see how the Beloit Trojans and Lincoln, Sylvan Lucas softball, and Sylvan Lucas Lincoln softball, I should say, and then baseball as well, coming up here next week in regional baseball and softball. All the latest in local sports at ncksports.com.
All right. The NFHS, National Federation of High Schools, has approved a shot clock for high school basketball and has left the decision to implement the shot clock to each state's Activities Association. So in this case, State of Kansas, Kansas State High School Activities Association. It would not be in effect this year. It would be the year after. It'd be the 2022-2023 season. A 35-second shot clock would be permitted in high school basketball games by state association adoption. A proposal for a national rule mandating a shot clock was not approved. So this is not a mandate saying that every school is going to have to come up with the money with shot clocks and man them and all this. That's not the case at all. It is up to the state associations, and they have time to gather information to decide whether or not they want to enact that. A shot clock was among the topics discussed by the National Federation of State High School Associations at its rules committee meeting. That's the big one. Here's a little bit more about it. Rule 2-14 states that each state association may adopt a shot clock beginning in the 2022-23 season, as I mentioned. According to guidelines outlined in the basketball rules book, guidelines include displaying two timepieces that are connected to a horn that is distinctive from the game clock horn and using an alternative timing device, such as a stopwatch at the scores table, for a shot clock malfunction. The guidelines also allow for corrections to the shot clock only during the shot clock period in which an error occurred and the officials have definite information relative to the mistake or malfunction. Listen, I've said this, and many people that are all about having a shot clock in high school basketball have no idea what it takes to implement it.
Yeah.
Because just like those are the same people that think coaches don't just show up and their players supposed to play great. They also are the same people that think money grows on trees. They're also the same people that believe that you don't have to prepare for a radio broadcast. You just show up and everything's set up for you. And you know that the prom is all set up beforehand, and project graduation set up right beforehand, and track meets just run themselves, and wrestling tournaments run themselves. It just everything takes care of itself. You know, the car fills itself up with gasoline on its own. Cruise control means you don't have to. You know, I'm going a little bit. I'm facetious here, but this is the thing. When all of these people say, and there are a lot of people that are for it, and don't get me wrong, I'd like to see a shot clock too. In regards to the game, I would love to see a shot clock. But I'm telling you, I think it's unrealistic. And I'm going to tell you why it's unrealistic. The same people that are clamoring that they want a shot clock in high school basketball, will those people even be going to games that want it anyway? And if they are going to those games, are they willing to go down to the scores table and help out with it?
No.
And my guess is no. Because that's what we do. We bitch and moan and complain in life about things we don't have. And then when we can actually have it, and then it requires somebody to step up and actually walk the walk instead of just talk the talk. Because we all can talk a good game. But can we actually walk the walk? You always hear the saying, actions speak louder than words. Okay, so you're clamoring for a high school shot clock in basketball. Okay, cool. I'm with you. How much is it going to cost? Who's going to run it? One more thing for the officials to worry about, and we have a shortage of officials already. Mm-hmm. That makes it even more complicated for officials. One more thing to worry about. The only time they got to worry about a violation in regards to time is the end of each quarter. Now they're going to have to worry about it every possession. Now, I think a 35-second shot clock, I would think that's long enough. Most teams will take a shot prior to that, but if you play really good defense, if you're patient, you can still milk the clock down to 5 seconds every time if you want to shorten the game. We saw that when college basketball used to have the 45-second shot clock. So while I'm all for a shot clock, my question, and once again, people seem to not be able to answer it for me because they're just all gung-ho about a shot clock. It's like, well, okay. Guess what? The school administrations now have to come up with, if Keisha decides that the year after this year is when it's the first you can enact the implement the shot clock in high school basketball, If Keisha decides we're going to have a shot clock and they want everybody to have it, the school administration, you're gonna have to probably have a school board involved too in regards to approving expenses, right? So you're gonna have to buy shot clocks, not one, two. I just read it. You have to have one on each end. Then you're gonna have to have the hookup to it, so that it does not malfunction all the time. Okay. And then you're going to have to make sure it is a distinct device with a different sound of horn. And you're going to have somebody manually run it. I'm going to tell you right now, games that I'm at, and I know you see the same thing, and I'm at a 3A school when I cover games most of the time. Sometimes I'm at 1A schools. You're doing mostly 1A sports, sometimes 2A. I'm going to tell you that these schools, sometimes it's like pulling hair just to get somebody to run the scoreboard. Let alone add another person to the equation. Here's another thing. Where are they going to sit? Some of the score table I see, there ain't any room to sit down anyway. Mm-hmm. You got an official score. You got somebody that is keeping a book. You've got somebody that's running the clock. You've got a PA announcer. Now, that can be fixed fairly easily. You can figure out a way to do that. But sometimes it's like pulling hair to get somebody to be the PA announcer. Sometimes it's pulling teeth to get somebody to run the scoreboard. And then sometimes the people that are at the scoreboard, of course, immediately get yelled at because they forget they're learning how to run the scoreboard and nobody has any patience in the stands. Put up the points! If you would look down, they're trying to figure it out. They're making, you know, maybe they put it on the wrong end. It's instant gratification, satisfaction, and they think it just happens when you snap your fingers. And so as I get older and maybe wiser, I don't know, I understand there's a lot more to make something work. Okay, a car doesn't run because of just the engine. It needs many other things in order to work. When you put on a sporting event, such as a high school basketball game, since we're talking high school basketball, it takes a village of people to make it work. But do you as a regular fan see that? No, you don't. You really probably don't. Many of you probably don't. You don't see the AD running back and forth feverishly trying to make sure officials get from one place to another. You don't understand behind the scenes about, oh my God, there's an official that's sick. Now we're short an official. How are we going to get officials to the JV game? And then how are we going to schedule? Oh, that's another thing. The athletic director has a lot of responsibilities just for one sporting event. Here's another thing. Somebody then's got to organize a concession stand because, God forbid, you go to a sporting event with no food to buy, right? So then people will bitch and moan and complain about, there's no concession stand. How am I supposed to make it in life? Here's a thought. Take some food with you. Go out to the car. I don't know. You'll survive. But people got to run a concession stand. And that requires adult supervision because you usually have students or classes running concession stand. So there's that. There's also then the clock operator. You have to get your officials. You've got coaches involved. You're going to have water on the sideline for your basketball players. You got managers. There's so many people that are involved. You got people at the front door that are usually volunteers, or maybe they get paid since it's extra time as a school employee, that they're making sure, especially, of course, this past year, making sure your temperature is okay to come in. Or they're making sure that you're not trying to lie about the two people allowed to come in. And now, if we get back to normal, they still got to take your money. That's right. They'll take your money because you have to pay to get in, and they'll stamp your hand, and they'll make sure people aren't abusing that. Okay? You've also got people that clean the place. If you don't know about this, they set up the bleachers before the game. They clean the floors because that needs to be done. And then they're picking up all of your... Let's see. How should I say this? Picking up after all you slobs that can't, you know, keep popcorn in a bag and have M&Ms strung all over the place and leave your drinks in the bleacher instead of throwing them in a trash can. Those people have to clean after the game. I see that. You see that. Mm-hmm. Because when the game is over, I'm packing up my equipment after a post-game interview. And when I leave, guess what? Do you think the place shuts down? I'm last person walking out? Nope.
Not normally.
The athletic director's still there, almost always. Coaches sometimes are still there. All right? You got somebody still cleaning up in the concession stand area sometimes, a popcorn machine or whatever, and you still got people that are cleaning the facility. So you want to add one more thing to the equation. That's fine. I am okay with adding a shot clock to high school basketball. But it doesn't automatically just happen. Now, an athletic director or school administration is going to have to figure out and find one more person to run a shot clock. Going to have to teach them how to run a shot clock. Going to have to go over it with officials as to how to handle a shot clock violation, all right? Or, God forbid, there's a malfunction, and the officials got to come over and help them figure that out. I've seen scoreboard malfunctions quite a bit over the years, let alone a shot clock. Okay? That's going to have to be reset all the time, whereas a game clock, you rarely have to reset the time. The shot clock is always going to have to go back to 35, right? After every single possession. Here's another thing. You know, it's really not easy, and it's not even easy for people that are really, really big into sports and watched a ton of basketball. You know what's also not easy? How are you going to determine if a ball goes and it's an air ball, or it's almost an air ball, and you think it's an air ball, and so you don't reset the shot clock, but the official saw it graze the rim. Now immediately you got to go over and say, no, we got to reset the shot clock. That's going to slow down the game. It's going to stop the flow of the game a little bit. So people don't think about that at all. And as a person running a shot clock, what they typically do with a game clock is you wait for the official for the whistle, then you stop the clock, whatever. Well, that's not going to happen when the shot goes up in a shot clock situation, because they ain't going to blow the whistle to stop the game when the ball's in the air and it ends up being an air ball and somebody resets the shot clock and the official's like, no, never hit rim. The shot clock it should still be running. Reset it to 5. I'm telling you, people don't understand how complicated this is going to be. And now you can sit here and you can hide behind your blinders and say, well, college does it and pro does it. Well, first of all, those are paid people. Those people are paid. In some cases in high school, they're volunteers. They're not getting paid. Even if they are getting paid, it's a whole nother thing to learn. And it's not just for them to learn. It's the athletic director to learn. Officials, as I just talked about earlier, are going to have to learn how to deal with this with shot clocks. Now, if they're college officials, it shouldn't be a big adjustment. But they're going to have to deal with more inexperienced people running a shot clock. Yeah. So there's all kinds of things I just gave you behind the scenes, ladies and gentlemen, that I hope you understand. It doesn't just automatically happen. And that when you add a shot clock, you might be super happy about it. There's a lot of people that are all excited about replay. Remember that? We need replay. We'll get it right. Now those same people bellyache about replay. Yeah. So what's going to happen when you have all kinds of stoppages because of shot clock issues, or the shot clock doesn't work, and then you got to get some technical person, right, come in to fix the shot clock, or one of them goes down. Now what do you do? How do you run that as an official? One end has a shot clock, one end doesn't. It doesn't work.
How are you going to handle that? Are we going to just eliminate the shot clock for the game? Then somebody's going to have to run a stopwatch? I mean, how are we going to do that? I mean, we barely sometimes can get our scoreboard operators to keep up with what's happening. I'm not trying to be mean to scoreboard operators, but sometimes the action is fast and furious. Sometimes they can't even keep up. How's a shot clock person going to be able to keep up? You can get the score 10 seconds after it goes up. You can get that right. It's okay to delay putting up 2 points on the scoreboard. God forbid people got to wait a few seconds. Mm-hmm. But the clock thing is the main thing they got to focus on as a scoreboard operator, all right?
Yeah.
Well, the only job, but it's a very important one, for the shot clock, but there are two things. One, you're going to have to reset it, and you're going to have to make sure that it runs properly. But then you're going to have to decide, you're going to have to be the official on the sideline, which you're not qualified to do anyway. In regards to being an official, you're going to have to determine with your own eyes that that ball hit the rim or not. Now, you can try to look at an official, and the official may try to give a signal showing that it hit rim or keep the shot clock running, but that's one more thing for the official to worry about.
Yeah.
It's one more thing, and if the person on the side is trying to watch what's happening in the game and trying to actually enjoy watching the game a little bit while they're doing a service for their community, I'm telling you, there's a lot more to this than people even fathom and understand, and I'm probably missing some stuff. So it is always easy to just say, we need a shot clock. I'm tired of teams stalling. I'm tired of teams holding the ball for 4 minutes. You know what? I get it. It's not sexy. It's boring. But you know what? The other team can play defense. A lot of times in these stall situations, you know why the stall situations happen? Because the other team and their coach decides not to just sit back in a zone or lay off, and they let it happen. So if you want to end all this stalling, you got to be more aggressive defensively. I mean, that's what'll end it.
Yeah.
You got to force them into a shot. You're going to have to force them into a turnover. Okay? Because if a team's really stalling a lot, odds are it's a way to try to stay in the game, and they're not as good as the other team, more often than not. Now, they get a lead. Of course, you can stall, and if you're the better team, you can keep the ball away. And I understand as a fan, that is not a pleasing. That you, when you're looking at a basketball game, you want to see some points. You want to see action. Totally get it. And I'm totally don't like the stall game either. But it's within the letter of the rules. We were just talking about yesterday. There is no unwritten rule that says you can't stall. That is allowed. Now, when you have a shot clock, you eliminate that. That's great. But what you need to understand is just like replay that people didn't foresee or think through or understand what would happen is that when you have replay, you're going to have stoppages to review the play. You're going to have controversy. You're going to have criticism. You're going to have malfunctions. You're going to have problems. What do you think is going to happen with a shot clock in high school basketball? Am I over amplifying this too much? Because I watch what happens in front of me at a ball game. I see people that are doing their darndest and their best that aren't really, in some cases, probably not even qualified to run certain stuff, but they're doing it because nobody else will do it.
Yeah.
And now we're going to add the shot clock. Okay. And now we got to fit in the official side. We have a shortage of officials already. That's one more thing for officials to deal with and one more thing to get screamed and yelled about. How did you not know that hit the rim? That was an air ball. That didn't hit rim. They said it hit rim. No, it didn't. Well, how do you know? We had no replay.
Yeah.
The shot clock's still running. Why is it running? It should have been reset.
Yeah. So that's the biggest thing on that one right there, the air ball or did it hit rim, is we can't go back and look at it like college and pros can, right?
Right.
And say, hey, we should have reset the shot clock. So it is. And
it's a different animal than people think.
The problem is people, there's those certain group of fans that aren't going to understand that, right? Now, normal fans understand that, yeah, there's never been a replay in high school sports, so that you got to trust what the officials are saying.
Right.
You got to trust how they called that, right? And it's just like everything, whether they called it a catch or not, whether the guy stepped out of bounds or not, whether who it was tipped off out of bounds in the last 2 minutes, you can't go to the monitor and find out, right? You just got to trust that the officials are making the right decisions. So, yeah, I mean, their logistics is always going to be the issue when you're talking about adding something new like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially one that's going to have cost, one that's going to take more time and volunteers to run it and things of that nature, right? I think, like you said, you know, if college officials are doing high school as well and they've dealt with this before, it's not going to be that much of a change. They just got to remember, oh yeah, we got to do this in high school too.
Right.
We got to be paying attention to that.
But they'll be dealing
not a
with
lot,
more inexperienced people.
A lot of people that I know of around here. There's a select few that actually do college and high school. Most of the guys around here I know are just high school officials.
Right.
You know, they don't do college stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, obviously, I think on the official side of it, it's something that they would adapt to just like everything else they have.
Sure, I think over time they will.
Over time, it'll be a better thing that they can adapt to.
Right.
I think that everything we're talking about with implementing a shot clock is the initial response, right?
Exactly right.
The initial implementation of the shot clock is going to tax a lot of different people.
Absolutely.
And there's going to be more to it than just somebody voting in my poll on Twitter saying, yes, they support the shot clock, right? It's an easy click to say, yes, I support that.
Of course.
I click yes,
me
I support
too.
That.
Me too.
Okay, I went down to my nephew's first spring tournament, I guess, down there in Wichita, and they had a 30-second shot clock. Mm-hmm. It was awesome.
Sure.
Like, I loved it because, I mean, if you play good defense and if you get in somebody's grill, you can force shot clock mm-hmm. violations and they don't even get a shot up. And if you're quick and you have an up-tempo style of play, you're never going to have to worry about the shot clock. That 35 mm-hmm. seconds is going to – you're not even going to get – their coach said, hey, we're probably taking a shot within 15 seconds every time we're down
sure.
the floor.
Yeah.
And if you're a team that runs and plays like that, you don't have to worry about a shot
right.
clock. But if you play defense, like a lot of teams like to do, mm-hmm. when they run too, they like to be in your face defensively, then you can force shot clock violations. So mm-hmm. there's everything I like about it, right?
Oh,
but
sure.
implementing it and getting it to be able to be run in a smooth way mm-hmm. is going to take a while.
Oh,
even
no
if
question.
Even if they vote yes to start this in 2022-23,
right.
all the school districts are like, we'll find the money, we'll figure out how to do it to get it installed and do all that. We'll find the people to work it. It might take a little bit, but we think the benefit of having it outweighs the detriment of having it, of trying to find and implement it. And even if they do that, it's going to take a while to get that thing oiled up. Once they do start it, and people are going to have to realize that you said yes, you support it.
Mm-hmm.
Now get used to it and understand what it's going to take to get it to be a well-oiled machine and to get it to where you need to be to have success with it and have it be a part of the game like you wanted it.
Once again, you know, I'm for a shot clock. My question is the struggles of implementing it at the high school level, because there are
logistics are going to be the biggest.
That's going to be the biggest issue, because as you just mentioned, you know, college and pro have the backup of replay. High school has no backup of replay. So it's one more thing for the officials to deal with, and some are experienced at it, some are not. But then having people on the sideline knowing how to run the shot clock, and then you have two clocks to worry about. You got your game clock and your shot clock. Over time, can we learn to adapt and figure it out? Yes, I agree. But there are going to be a lot of growing pains that people aren't aware of, and they're going to have to be prepared for it. It's like, I mean, how many years ago was it when we instituted instant replay? We're still going through growing pains.
Yeah.
And this is from some of the biggest professional sports in all of the land. We still can't get it right. The shot clock, here's a couple of things about the shot clock that are good and bad. First of all, having a shot clock in high school basketball, it'll be good because it will award really good defenses. Because, you know, sometimes you can play great defense for a minute and then, you know, a team still is able to score because eventually it's hard to play defense that long.
Mm-hmm.
So it will reward the defense with a shot clock. It'll increase the pace of play in regards to offense, maybe. The bad thing will be, though, if you got a team that isn't a great shooting team and they got to shoot it every 35 seconds, they're going to put up some bad shots because they have to hurry and force it up like a last-second situation at the end of a quarter. So you're going to have some teams that are going to be challenged by this in regards to teams that aren't very good offensively. This is not going to help them at all.
No.
Teams that are really good defensively, this is going to help them quite a bit, in my opinion. But I will say this, and I've covered high school basketball for – God, I'm old when I say this. But I have called games on the radio, whether color commentary or play-by-play on the radio or even done some TV over the years. I've done this for now 27 years, almost three decades. God, I feel old when I say that. Almost three decades, all right? And I didn't keep track of a log of, I should have, of every single game I've called over the years, but I guarantee I've called probably 1,500 games or something, or 2,000. I don't know what it is, but it's
at
a ton.
Least.
It's a lot.
I know where I'm at because I did keep track, so you've got to be ahead of me mostly.
Probably so. And, you know, I've done a lot of TV stuff when I was in college and even out of the, and then, so yeah, I've done tons of games. And the point being is that of all the games that I've covered, I can't think of more than a couple where stalling was an issue.
Yeah.
So see, that's my thing. Like, I'm sitting here and I'm going, is it that big of a problem that we have to have a shot clock? And I think in some cities or towns, it probably is. But I'm going to tell you right now, the only time here, since I've been here, and I've been here for 15 years, the only time I can think of when it would have been good to have a shot clock, and it actually worked out for the team I was covering anyway, because the other team decided to stand and sit in a 1-3-1 zone and allow them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have stopped it had you just come out in man-to-man, but they weren't a man-to-man team, or at least they didn't want to play that, was a Beloit sub-state game against St. Mary's back a few years ago, where Beloit was, you know, it's like Ryan Eilis, like, we got the ball. We'll just hold the ball as long as we can. If we can milk it all the way to the final possession, we will. Why wouldn't we? You know, why would we go take a shot and let them run out the clock? And I, you know, personally, for me as a fan, that's boring. But at the same time, I totally get the strategy. It made sense. And guess what? It worked.
Yeah.
Because Beloit said Vinny Paulin hit a shot. They ran down the clock in both overtimes. First one didn't work out. Second one did. And they hit the game winner about 4 seconds ago, moved on to sub-state finals. That's the only time I can think of that was been a big issue where people could complain about, well, we really need a shot clock because that team was able to hold it for 3 minutes or 2.5. And I keep coming back to, if you don't like that, then do something about it. You know, it's the same thing that I hear about when people are whining about guys celebrating in the end zone or celebrating on the base paths when they hit a home run, or people that are mad because people run up the score on them. And I say, and I understand sportsmanship in regards, I think high school and below, you shouldn't be running up the score. You know, you can control that. I get that. Show a little bit of mercy. And maybe even college, you could agree with that. But in the pros, I don't want to hear, you know, this is the thing. I'm tired of even the coaches of the pros and the players of the pros whining about somebody running it up or scoring a late touchdown. You're paid to stop somebody. You're
good
paid
money
to score. You're paid a lot of money, millions of dollars, to stop the other team. You are paid to do your job. And so don't whine about that's unsportsmanlike or so forth and so on. You have a job to do. If you don't like it, you can stop it. There's a way for you to stop it. Like, if a team is trying to score points, if you tackle and cover better, you will stop them. It's up to you. You can end the running up the score. You do have some control. Well, the other team's better than us. Well, then you got to get better. You're paid a lot of money to be really good.
Yeah.
So at the pro level, you can do something about it. Now, at the high school level, when you have a whole bunch of stalling, you can do something about it. You can. You can come out and go aggressive man-to-man, and you know what? You might get burned, backdoor cut, layup, and you fell for the trap. Or you can sit back and let them shorten the game or run out the clock. But you do have a choice. You have a choice to actually go out and play man-to-man and play defense and play pressure, and yes, you're vulnerable giving up an easy layup, or you can sit back and let them stall. When there is a stall, when people stall in basketball, it's because of both sides. It isn't because of just the one team decides to stall and the other team says, okay, they're stalling, we got to sit here and not do anything. You can go guard them. You can go trap them. You can run and trap. You can play keep away against the run and trap. Eventually, you're going to foul, or eventually you'll give up a layup, or you might get a turnover. And so you do have some control against the stall. And so I do get tired of hearing they're stalling and that's not fair. The other team has a chance to stop them from stalling. And you may say, well, but they're not as athletic and as good as them. So, well, okay, if that's the case, though, usually a team that stalls is a team that doesn't have as good a chance to win goes to a stall technique. We've seen it some state games where we know we're going to lose by 30. So to keep it close, we're going to stall. Colby Girls did it 1 year, a 1918 state game, if I remember correctly. I think it was Colby, and I forgot the other team. And well, that was boring. That was
done to them when I was in college.
That was boring
state,
as heck.
Yeah.
But you know what? That was their only chance to win, but the other team allowed them to do it the whole game. So, you know, there is some control as to trying to stop or slow down, not slow down, to speed up. You don't want to slow down a stall. It's already a stall. Speed up a stall. Now, I do understand the shot clock would alleviate that problem, and I'm for that. I am. I'm for that. But I want the record to reflect there are ways to get teams out of a stall. And a lot of times when you watch stalls, at least I have over the years, and I haven't seen tons of them, I don't think it's a big, horrible pan epidemic or whatever of basketball where there's too much stalling. I don't see it very much. But when there is, it's usually because the other team lets you do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's as big an issue as some people make it out to be, but I'm only seeing it from the teams and the games I cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be willing to bet you there are a lot, I bet there may be only once or twice in a game where teams, on average, I would say, and it depends on the teams you're covering, girls and boys basketball might be a little bit different, but I would be willing to say that there is a turnover or a shot attempted within 35 seconds almost all the time anyway. I mean, yeah, there might be occasional time where somebody holds it for 50 seconds or a minute, but I'm going to have to be honest with you, and I'm not trying to be mean to the young kids out there, but the teams that pass the ball around for 45, 50 seconds trying to get a good shot, more than likely it ends with a turnover. So mm-hmm. they can't hold the ball more than a minute anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really a big issue to me around here.
Yeah, what you're talking about was stalling. I think I've never dealt with like an entire game of stalling.
Yeah,
like,
I haven't
like
either.
Some people have.
I haven't either. Now that would irritate.
Yeah, because I know like back when Trigo was really good, Ellis beat him like 23-15 in a boys basketball game in 05, I think.
Sure.
And that was an entire game of stalling. Like that was their game plan coming in. They did it. They stalled. They got the ball and took the time. Now I've never been a part of that. Now I've been a part of quarters like that, mm-hmm. like where somebody started the fourth quarter and just they tossed it into the front court and just stood it. At half court.
I've seen Riley County girls do it a lot under Harold Oliver, who's no longer the coach. They get a lead, and then it shortens the game, and the games are in the 20s.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of that, but he's playing within the rules.
Well, exactly. And this would be within the rules of changing that, right?
Right.
You can no longer do that anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
But more of what I don't see stalling per se. What I see is figure eight around the wings and the top of the key, and nobody's ever even looking at the basket,
sure.
and you've been running around for a minute and 15 seconds and haven't even taken a shot.
Right.
I've seen that from multiple teams. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not – listen, there's not a lot of teams that are shooting in 35 seconds in the games that I do.
Wow. My games, I usually see it.
Yeah. And I think girls
basketball, there's in the boys' games, most of the time –
Yeah, boys' games are probably –
The girls' games, I think they hold on the ball longer.
Yeah.
I do. Although I will say, in some of those situations, when they do hold it longer, honestly, the result ends up being worse.
Yeah.
Because, especially if they're behind.
Yeah.
They wasted the time. They didn't get off a shot and turn it over anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I'm maybe thinking about more girls' games as well of what I'm doing. Now, there's a certain boys' team that everybody will know that did that
mm-hmm.
For multiple years.
Right.
Because that's just their philosophy. That's the way they play the game.
Right.
So. Listen, I've seen it in different ways. Now, Elyria Christian probably would have got a lot of shot clock violations against mm-hmm. Hanover in the state championship this year down there at mm-hmm. Barton County. Northern Valley and Hanover would not have,
right?
Hanover would have forced a lot of shot clock violations against Elyria Christian as well. Mm-hmm. So there's just different styles of how you play and how you approach that. And again, you do have to, if you don't like it and there is no shot clock, then you do extend. And that's mm-hmm. what Hanover ended up doing. They mm-hmm. extended their 1-3-1 even past half court right at the inbound, so they couldn't do anything.
So they did something about it? Are you just telling me they did something about it and altered their philosophy to do something defensively to take them out of the stall game?
Yeah.
What a concept.
And it wasn't an actual stall. It was, you know, just methodical,
deliberate,
and things like that. Now, Hanover's elite. They got athletes that can extend that.
Sometimes you
don't have to worry about getting beat. If this guy gets beat up here, somebody's going to have help back here.
Yes.
And so there are some teams that can't do that, right? Because, like you said, they're going to get baited into the trap,
right?
And they're going to come out and extend their defense. Well, all along, they weren't even trying to be deliberate. They were just trying to get you to come out so they can find a backdoor cut and an easy layup, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, there's some teams that aren't going to be able to do it as mm-hmm. effective as a Hanover would and say, hey, we're going to go ahead and extend this defense and make you work for it.
I think some coaches are worried about getting burned if they do come way out on a stall and then give an easy layup. And so what they end up doing is instead of being aggressive, they then just pray and cross their fingers the other team will make a mistake and turn it over.
Yeah.
And that usually doesn't happen that often either.
Yeah.
If you got a good team that's running the stall. So do you think this is something that – do you think it's such an issue in regards to high school basketball that we need a shot clock? Like it's one thing for you and me, and we agree, by the way. I think most people out there listening probably agree that, hey, if we could pull this off smoothly, let all for a shot clock in high school basketball. I'm with it. I'm cool with it. I'm all for it. It's one thing for us to say we're all for it and we want it. The question is, do we need it?
Man, it's a tough question.
I think in some places they feel they do. I don't know if we need it. I'm okay with it. I'm for it. I'll vote for it. I'm not convinced we need it.
Yeah.
I might be all right.
The game's not going to stop if we don't get it, right?
No,
like
no.
if they don't do it.
No.
You know, we've been doing it all this time. So we don't,
right.
I mean, from an aspect of that, you don't need it.
Right.
But I don't know.
I will say this, with shot clock violations now, you're going to have more turnovers. There's no question. Yeah. Here's why you're going to have more turnovers. One, you're going to have shot clock violation if you don't get it off in 35 seconds. Two, you're going to have to speed up your offense to try to get into a shot attempt situation, which is going to cause you to take a little few more chances on passes because you know the shot clock's winding down anyway, and you're going to turn it over. There are going to be more turnovers that come out of 35 shot clock violations, which, once again, rewards the defense, but it's going to make it tough on the offense. And so I think a lot of people believe that scoring's going to go up automatically because that's going to eliminate the stall game. I don't think the stall game is a epidemic in high school sports and basketball across the country. I may be wrong, at least not in where I'm at. But people are thinking, what's the first thing people think with a 35-second shot clock? What are you typically thinking? More shots, more points,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
More offense, more fun to watch instead of deliberate installing. What if we do this at the high school level, and it's going to happen with some teams, where it's going to actually cause them to have more turnovers and it's going to be harder to watch?
Yeah, yeah.
It could be. Against really good teams, it's going to be that way.
Well, yeah, yeah. But there's all kinds of things that you think are going to happen that aren't, right?
Sure.
And so I think it's more of a pace thing, but if you can't get that figured out, again, that's once you have it all, it's a well-oiled machine,
right?
And pace will be a little different too. Like you won't be sitting and watching a team for a minute just running a figure eight. I think that's why most people want it, right?
Sure.
I think they've seen those kind of teams that play that are deliberate, that don't even look at the basket for a minute.
Riley and County that, girls yeah, would be one,
and,
I think.
And those are why a lot of people want the sure. shot clock in Kansas. No. I don't think it's because of the rare occasion where somebody's actually just sitting at half court
right.
holding the ball.
Yeah.
I think it's more of that
yeah.
than anything. A lot of people think we need it. Now, again, do we need it? Probably not.
Well, we've gone many years yeah. without it. We could probably live without it. But at the same time, things can always improve. I mean, we've gone many years without smartphones, and now we have yeah. them, and we're glad we have them. So we can talk about how – I said the other day, there's three constants in life, death, taxes, unfortunately, and change. And this is change. And once again, I'm not against the change. What I'm trying to explain to everybody out there is you need to understand what it's going to take to implement
this. Doesn't automatically happen.
This is not going to automatically happen. It's not going to be smooth when it first happens. And it might go a little smoother than I think. It may go worse than I think. But I think you and I agree, without question, that there's going to be growing pains with it, as with usually anything that you do and implement. I think overall the idea behind it is good. My question is, will the implementation be good?
Yeah.
And people need to understand that we're getting to the point, and all you got to do is look around. I don't see younger generation people volunteering their time as much. And what I mean by that is, if I'll give you the 8-man All-Star games as an example. You have a lot of people that have helped with 8-man All-Star games behind the scenes with different organizations, and younger people are as involved in some of these organizations as older people are. And so a lot of times through organizations at clubs, you end up helping do different events, such as the 8-Man All-Star Game would be an example, or who knows what else. And I'm not saying young people don't volunteer their time. What I'm saying is that what happens is in some communities, and I see it, and I've talked to other people in other communities, and they talk about the same thing, is what's going to, I mean, there's events that have been canceled because people don't volunteer their time to run the event anymore. We have that in our backyard here in Glen Elder.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you have the same people always doing the work and always doing the volunteering, and then other people don't step up to, you know, take the torch and run with it or help out, then those people that are always doing the time and always volunteering, what happens to them? They get burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
Or they say, you know what? It's time for somebody else to take this over. When nobody grabs the torch, that's that. It's over, right? Well, what about the same? What about this? I mean, you've got people that I know people, older people that run the scoreboard and run the clock and do PA. Eventually, somebody else is going to have to take the torch. Now, can you find somebody? Yeah, but you might have to really scrounge to find somebody, and that's the last thing an athletic director needs to worry about, or a school administration putting on an event is, oh my gosh, I can't find a PA guy. It's like, seriously, nobody can step up and grab a mic and talk? I mean, because people are afraid to hear their voice, or they're afraid to put themselves out there, or they're just lazy and don't want to do it. Or they just want to be a fan and they don't want to, and that's the bigger thing. I want to be a fan and enjoy it. And I get that. I truly do. I get that. But the point I'm trying to make here is whether it's running stuff at a basketball game or whether it's running an event in your community, whether it's a chilly day or a fun run or whatever it might be, summer kids cafe, you know, things like that. You have to have people involved to make it work. And what is happening in some places, and I've heard this and I've seen it, is that once these people that have been doing all this time and volunteering all these years for this event eventually have bad health, aren't doing well, decide to retire and do something for themselves, good for them, there's nobody to pick up the slack. And thus, you have a shortage of volunteers. You have a shortage of people willing to do that stuff. And people, the next generation, aren't as involved as they should be because they always blow it off as, well, that person's doing it. It's all good. I don't got to worry about it. And that could easily happen in this specific situation in regards to all the jobs that you have at a scorer's table in a ball game. It can easily get to the point where you're trying to scrounge up somebody. Mm-hmm. We tried to do video streaming for a school not too long, years ago, okay, when we first started streaming. We had a hard time getting somebody to run a camera.
Mm-hmm.
I was willing to give them movie tickets or pay them. I couldn't get anybody to do it. And so thus, yeah, we said, listen, if we can't get anybody to help us, then that idea is probably down the tubes. And that's what we did. We pulled the plug on that idea. Okay? That's just an example. Now, at a ball game, when you need how many different people, but usually it's the same people doing it. Yeah. What happens when those people decide, I'm out?
Yeah. You got to get a replacement.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of that, right?
A lot of challenges people don't see.
And there's things like, okay, there's things also where, like, okay, yeah, I really want this change to happen, but you are not
willing
the one
to do anything
that helps
for it.
Do right. it, you know, right?
Right.
I want to do this, but I don't want to be the one that has to do it,
That's
actually
right.
do it. Like,
right.
I want this to happen, but I'm not doing it.
I love the fun run and the chilly day. Why aren't we doing that anymore?
Yeah.
That was great. That was a blast. And did you see that sheet that came out in the mail saying we need volunteers, please sign up or we won't have these events?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why you don't have. Okay, let's move on to the Chiefs. So shot clock, it won't be this year. It might be next, the year after this season. You know, like I said, if we can pull it off, great. I'm all for the shot clock, but I just wonder how smooth it's going to go.
Yeah.
I think that's the bottom line that we're all talking about here. And trying to educate people out there that things just happen when you snap your fingers. It doesn't. Okay, NFL schedule was revealed. And the Chiefs, here's their schedule. The Chiefs will open up with the Browns at 3:25 week one on September the 12th at home in Arrowhead. Then they'll go to Baltimore. Then they'll be hosting the L.A. Chargers. They'll be at Philadelphia. Andy Reid will return to Philly to play the Eagles. Buffalo at home on a Sunday night. That's a huge game. Rematch of the AFC title game. At the Washington football team. At Tennessee. Then the Chiefs will have a Monday night game. Their only Monday night game of the season, which surprised me, when they will be hosting the Giants to come to town. Then, of course, the big one everybody's going to be circling the calendars, if Aaron Rodgers plays, is Week 9 on November 7th, 3:25. It'll be on Fox, Green Bay at Kansas City. Packers, Chiefs, Rodgers versus Mahomes one last time, or one first time and last time, possibly. Then at the Raiders, then they got the Cowboys coming to town. America's team, that should be an easy W. I let my friend BP know. Hey, I said, hey, Cowboys are coming to Arrowhead on November 21st. He goes, that'll be an L for the home team. I said, I think you're confused. I didn't say the game was
in
Dallas.
Arrowhead.
I said Arrowhead. Then the Chiefs have a bye. Home game against Denver, home game against Raiders, at the Chargers week 15. Then they host the Steelers, at the Bengals, and at the Broncos. So the Chiefs have a stretch where they won't be on the road for a full month. Because November 14th at the Las Vegas Raiders, and then home to Dallas, bye week, home to Denver, home to the Raiders. So the Chiefs will have four straight weeks where they won't have to go on the road. But they do close out the year with three of their four games on the road, and the last two on the road, at Cincinnati and at Denver. And by the way, I'm going to call out a friend of mine right now. Yeah. Bark, 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 bark. My chicken imitation. DT, my boy TT. He's a big Steeler fan. If you know the history, him and I have lost bets where we had to wear the other team's jersey. I've had to wear a Troy Polamalu jersey. He's had to wear a Chiefs jersey before when he's lost a bet when the Steelers play the Chiefs. So I sent him a text, just razzing him a little bit. And I said, hey, dude, get ready for the day after Christmas when the Chiefs put a beatdown on your Steelers at Arrowhead. And so he texted me back with this gigantic, huge bet that he wants to. I'm like, dude, I ain't going that far. And he wants 10 points. He wants 10 points. I'm like, the Chiefs are better than most teams and still don't cover the spread. We saw that last year. I'm like, and my oldest son goes, Dad, you'd be crazy to do that. I'm like, well, of course I'm not going to do that. So I had a counterproposal. My counterproposal was, okay, let's wager each man's favorite bottle of whiskey, okay? I know he likes a whiskey. I like a fine whiskey. And I said, here's the wager I propose because I have to feed my kids, all right? I got three growing boys, and my grocery bill keeps going up every month. So I can't bet what you want to bet initially. So let's do this. I said, we'll have this bet. Here's what I propose. We bet a bottle of your finest whiskey I'll buy for you, or if I win, you buy my finest bottle of whiskey that I like. And I said, I will give you whatever the spread is the day of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Chiefs versus Steelers. That could be 14. It could be 3. I don't know what it's going to be because, you know, Mahomes could be hurt or Roethlisberger could be hurt. We don't know. So I'm not going to make that bet now. What I'm just telling him, wait a minute. December 26th, the day after Christmas, when you open up your beautiful Christmas gifts, we go ahead and have that wager and whatever the spread. If the Chiefs are favored by 7, then you get your. I'll give you 7 points and we'll bet the finest whiskey for each other. And he's like, deal. He's all excited. He puts deal. So I go to bed last night. I'm like, all right, we have a wager and I'll have to keep track of that. You know, the day of, what's the spread? And then I'll probably lose, whatever. I'm cool with it. It's a fun bet. He texts me today, 6:04 in the morning. Yeah, I'm calling you out, man. Calling you out on live radio, buddy boy. My good friend Butterscotch. He goes, whoa, that game's in KC. Woof. All bets off. Pittsburgh can't win in KC. Proven fact. I've been to 3 of them. Have a good day, buddy. So he's the one that was talking a good game, wanting to bet. And at the end of the day, he weasels out like a ferret.
Maybe you had some of that fine stuff last night.
Maybe so.
When he texted
Maybe
you.
So. Maybe so. And now he's weaseled out of a wager that we made last night. I'm like, dude, like the Chiefs never win in Pittsburgh, but I bet that before.
Yeah.
But okay, Mr. Chicken Waffler. So, yeah, my buddy DT.
He didn't go that year where they gave up like 6 field goals and still lost in the playoffs to the Steelers.
Yes, Pittsburgh won at Arrowhead. Yes, they did. Uh-huh. I remember also the one time the Chiefs won in Pittsburgh was when Mahomes, one of his first starts as a Chief, and he led up the Steelers. And the Chiefs still had to hang on because their defense was so bad. So the Chiefs usually have bad experiences in Pittsburgh, and he's talking about Steelers' bad experiences at Arrowhead. They did win a playoff game at Arrowhead without scoring a touchdown.
Yeah.
So what are you whining about? Just step up and be a man and take the wager. It's called peer pressure, my friend. Step up to the plate. So that's the schedule for the Chiefs. What do you think? Good, tough, hard, easy?
Well, I mean, it's a schedule like you would expect after you won the one division
again.
And then won the AFC. And then you add in Green Bay, obviously, who knows what's going to be going on with them at that point.
Blake Bortles is they're going to sign him.
Yeah. So I mean it's not like a how do I feel one way or the other. I mean it's what it is. It's always what it is for me. You know, you play what the games are. Right? Strength of schedule can't even really be determined, like you said yesterday, until you actually get into the end of the season and the schedule. But it's a nice schedule. I like it. There's a lot of teams on there that you like to see and play and things of that nature. So.
Listen, their first 3 games look tough. Cleveland at home, at Baltimore, and the Chargers at home. But 2 of those 3 are home. The Browns, if Mahomes doesn't get hurt, I think they win that game comfortably in the playoffs. People are still worried about that. The Ravens, the Chiefs have owned them, so I'm not – and even if they lose, I'm not freaking out. The Chargers come to town. I think the Chargers are the biggest threat to them in the West. They've actually got a new coach that might know to actually go for it instead of punting to Mahomes. They got a really good young quarterback. But the Chargers every year are overhyped, and then they don't end up underachieving. So maybe this will be a different year. They're like the Texas Longhorns of the NFL. They're also the Dallas Cowboys of the AFC. All right? They're like built up, and then they fall apart. You know, and then they go to Philadelphia, and Philly won't be – I don't think they'll be as good. And then Buffalo at home, you know, that'll be prime time. The place will be jacked. There'll be full capacity. The Chiefs have announced that already.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be crazy. So I still think Chiefs will be okay there. At Washington, they're going to be down. At Tennessee, that'll be tough. Giants at home, you'd think they're okay. Green Bay at home, even with Rodgers playing, I'll take the Chiefs. At the Raiders, I don't know if the Raiders are going to be good or not. I mean, every year we hear about they're going to be improved, and then they start out good, and then they Then the Cowboys at home, I'm not freaking out about the Cowboys. Denver at home, not worried about them. Raiders at home, once again, you know, the Raiders did beat the Chiefs at Arrowhead last year. It'll be a tough game, rivalry, I get all that. At the Chargers, the Steelers, who knows what they're going to be like in Week 16 at home. At the Bengals, that could be a little bit of a trap game, you know, coming after a Steeler game. Bengals, they've got young talent, got Ja'Marr Chase, and they got Joe Burrow hopefully back by then. At Denver, you know, that's the Chiefs have owned the Broncos recently. Doesn't mean they'll automatically win this year. If Aaron Rodgers gets traded to the Broncos, that'll change the narrative as to what do you think the Chiefs and Broncos will do. Please keep note, all you Chiefs fans and NFL fans out there listening to the show right now, that there is one more regular season game than normal, 17 regular season games. That's right. So nobody's going to have a 500 record. Well, I guess you could. 8-8-1, have a tie. The Chiefs have just three preseason games at San Francisco, at the Cardinals, only one home preseason game that you can overpay for and pay for parking to watch a game that no starters are going to play in against the Vikings week three. That date has not been determined, by the way, but that'll be late August. So, and the first game of the preseason hasn't been determined what date either. So we're talking mid to late August. The Chiefs have the preseason first game of the year on September the 12th. As you just pointed out, and we mentioned yesterday, strength of schedule really is silly to worry about, and people waste a lot of time figuring it out, because if the Browns in week – who did the Chiefs – here we go. Great example. Who did the Chiefs open up with last night on Sunday Night Football, first game of the year, to kick off the NFL season? Chiefs are reigning Super Bowl champions. Who did they play at Arrowhead on that Thursday night?
Oh, man, I've lost my
– The Houston Texans.
Texans, yeah.
Who they beat. Like they were down 24-0 the year before. Deshaun Watson versus Patrick Mahomes, big marquee game, right? And that's – and you look at the schedule, like, Texans going to be one of the tough teams AFC. Mm. You look strength of schedule, like, Texans, oh, that's a tough game, but it's at home. We should be all right. And the Texans finished 4-12. So suddenly at the end of the year, that strength of schedule wasn't as tough as you thought it was. Same thing can be said this year. The Browns were really good last year. If Baker Mayfield gets hurt, they're in trouble, all right?
Yeah.
They are. The Browns could regress, and the Browns might end up having a train wreck, go 6-10. Suddenly, just after one game, that strength of schedule doesn't look that pretty, does it?
No.
Okay, so you sit here and go, oh, man, you know, Eagles, that's the easy one. Maybe the Eagles will turn around, Jalen Hurts will be the savior, and they go 11-5. Suddenly, that's a tougher game than you think going into week four.
Yeah.
You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick's lighting it up for the Washington football team. Suddenly, that's a tough game on the road. And Derrick Henry's hurt. Oh, Tennessee's not as tough as we thought it was. So it is really a waste of time, and it's silly to worry about strength of schedule, because there's always going to be teams that are on your schedule that had good years last year that are not going to be as good this year. And there's teams that you think are going to be easy as a fan. You go automatic W, and then as you get into the season, like, whoa, they're improved. They're better than we thought.
Mm-hmm.
Always happens. So the strength of the schedule, you should put the numbers up there. Somebody should do the homework, and I'm sure somebody maybe has. What was the strength of schedule right now when they release it? Like the Chiefs' strength of schedule, let's say it's the third hardest in the NFL. I have no idea what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say it's the third hardest. At the end of the year, the Chiefs is the 18th hardest. Which one matters more?
One at the end of the
year. Yeah, because that was the teams you played.
These are who you played.
You're not forecasting who you played. You're actually judging who you played. So strength of schedule is really overrated and no need to worry about it. And if you're the best team in the NFL, which I think the Chiefs are, or if you're the best team in the AFC, which I think they clearly are, why are you worried about how tough the schedule is?
Yeah, I mean, if you're supposedly at the elite level like the Chiefs are, it doesn't matter who's on the schedule.
Exactly.
Go out, play the game, and beat them, right?
Absolutely.
Because you're good enough to do it.
No doubt. I'll let you go grab Marvin real quick and then come back. We got a way to close the show here today. It's a hockey note. People are going to love this. So the revenge or reunion games that are pretty interesting. Tom Brady will go back to New England. It'll be Brady against Belichick, or it's really the Bucs against the Patriots, but that's how ESPN. You know what, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just going to tell you right now, you just do not want to watch ESPN unless you're a Brady fan or a Belichick or a Patriots-Bucs fan. You do not need to watch television. Well, you don't need to watch ESPN that week. And definitely not a couple days before October 3rd. And then don't need to even watch the show after the game on October 3rd. You might not even know any other NFL game existed and even was played on Sunday, October the 3rd. Because it's going to be all about Brady going back, trying to beat Belichick. That's the number one revenge or reunion game. I call it a reunion game. It's like, what's the revenge? I mean, they won six Super Bowls together, right? Why would there need to be revenge? The Bills at the Chiefs, now that I get as a revenge game. The Chiefs ended the Bills season. The Bills think they're the top contender against the Chiefs in AFC, which I would agree with. That's a Sunday night game, October 10th on NBC at Arrowhead. Now, this could definitely be a revenge game. DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt against their old team, the Cardinals against the Texans. That could be fun. Cleveland at Pittsburgh. Of course, Pittsburgh knocked out of the playoffs by Cleveland last year. That's always a good rivalry. They say the Eagles-Giants, which I really don't care. That one doesn't seem to matter too much. The interesting one, Jared Goff against Matthew Stafford. That's right. The quarterbacks are traded for one another. Stafford from the Lions to the Rams and Goff from the Rams to the Lions. They will meet each other. They were both number one overall picks in their respective drafts when they came out of college. They're going to play each other for the other team that they were traded for. That'll be interesting. On October 24th, Rams and the Lions. Jameis Winston, former quarterback of the Buccaneers before Brady came to town, he very well could be the starting quarterback for the Saints going to Tampa on a Sunday night. And here's another one that's kind of interesting. The Carolina Panthers' new quarterback, Sam Darnold, and their old quarterback, Cam Newton, and the Patriots come to Carolina on November 7th, although I think by then Mac Jones will be the starter and Cam Newton won't be. But Cam Newton could be playing against his old team coming up on November the 7th. Some interesting reunion, revenge games, whatever you want to call it, in the National Football League. KU's football head coach Lance Leipold, who is now, he's the man in charge there at KU with their football program. Best of luck to him. He may need it. He has added in a blend of former Buffalo assistants and returning KU coaches. He announced all 10 of his assistants. Brian Borland, he comes from Buffalo as the Jayhawks' new defensive coordinator. Andy Kotelnicki will take over the role of offensive coordinator. And Emmett Jones will remain on staff. He had been the interim coach after Les Miles was let go. He'll remain on staff as the Jayhawks' receivers coach. Also, a couple other coaches leaving Buffalo to come to Lawrence to work with Lance Leipold. You can read all about it, KUSports.com, KUAthletics.com as well. NBA last night, let's update you on what took place. James Harden returned to the hardwood at 18 points, 7 rebounds, 11 assists as the Nets beat the Spurs 128-116. Here's what's interesting about the Nets. If you follow the NBA, they've got the three-headed monster, right? They had Durant. They have, who's coming off the injury last year, sat out last year. Then they, of course, got Kyrie Irving. And then they traded and got James Harden. That's what the Nets have on their team, the three-headed monster. Do you know that Durant – this will be fun. Dusty's right here. Do you know how many games Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden have played together with the Nets so far?
Together?
Together this year.
Not a whole
– No, it's not many.
Two or three?
Seven.
I mean, the only ones I remember seeing, right?
Seven. They've only played seven games together. And here's the funny thing. Last night, Harden was expected to come back. He came back. Irving had to miss because he got hit in the head the game before. Or they would all had them together. So they thought they were going to have their eighth time together, and they didn't. And then the Nets beat your Spurs 128-116. So they've only played together for seven games. And they might, they've only got a couple games left. They might play a total of 10 games together and then hopefully have it all working out in the playoffs.
Yeah. That's why I said yesterday or the day before, whenever it was, that we still don't know the chemistry between those guys.
And their coach don't either.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So it could still implode on them if they don't do it right?
Yes, absolutely. the Knicks and Hawks punched their playoff tickets officially. The Hawks rallied in the fourth quarter to beat the Russell Westbrook and the Wizards. Russell had another big game, but it wasn't quite enough at the end. The Blazers won their fifth straight as they beat the Jazz 105-98, which gives the Suns still a chance, perhaps, to get the number one seed. And the Lakers last night, we talk about the Nets, and we talk about how health's going to determine the NBA Finals, possibly. We talked about the Nets issues. But the Lakers, LeBron reports where he was going to play last night, and then they're like, all right, AD's back, Well, AD got hurt. He had an adductor strain, a bit of a groin injury. So then he was a scratch last night. And then LeBron, who was originally, they talked about he was probably going to be a go last night, he was a scratch. So the Lakers beat the Rockets by 2 points, and the Rockets are horrible. The Lakers beat them by two without AD and without LeBron on the night they raised their championship banner in L.A. in front of about 3,000 fans as Kyle Kuzma hit the game winner with 7 seconds to go. So the Lakers get the win. But there's a situation where we thought LeBron's coming back, and then AD wasn't going to be able to play. And all of a sudden, all right, LeBron's not going to play either. So LeBron's going to have a couple games before they go into the playoffs, and it could be a play-in game. Westbrook last night did not get a triple-double, by the way. He had 34 points and 15 rebounds, or 15 assists, but only 5 rebounds. The Cavs beat the Celtics 102-94. Kevin Love with 30 for the Cavs. There's a Kevin Love sighting. The Mavericks beat the Pelicans 125-107. Luka Doncic, 33 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists. I mentioned the Trailblazers. Dame Lillard with 30 points as they beat the Jazz 105-98. And, of course, the Lakers with the win over the Rockets, 124-122. So taking a look at the standings, as we've been doing about every day here for you NBA fans out there, the Sixers have a game-and-a-half lead for the first seed in the East. The Bucks are now game-and-a-half behind the Nets for the 2 seed. Atlanta's jumped into the 4 spot now ahead of Miami and New York, but there's only a half game determining between the 3. Boston's locked into the play-in tournament, by the way. In the West, the Suns have an outside chance to catch the Jazz, but very unlikely, as they've lost their last 2. So the Jazz more likely be the 1 seed. The Suns will be the 2. The Clippers and the Nuggets could go 3-4, interchange there. And then Portland and Dallas are tied for the 5, and they're both a game ahead of the Lakers. So the Lakers still trying to work their way out of the play-in tournament. And the Warriors right now are clinging to that 8 spot, half-game lead over the Grizzlies. And the Spurs, it looks like, haven't clinched it yet, but they look like they'll probably get that 10th spot out west. So we'll keep you updated there. I have waited this entire show. I have been very excited I mean, there's lots of energy today. I was excited about the prospects of a shot clock in high school basketball, but dismayed by what all will take place to make it all happen. I was dismayed by the Royals losing again, but I'm excited about the Chiefs and their season and their schedule and everything else. And then I'm excited about KU coaching staff. You know, they get all these guys to join Lance Leipold's crew. But then it's a Debbie Downer because, you know, a point guard that was considering KU chose John Calipari in Kentucky. Ty-Ty Washington. What a great name, Ty-Ty. Ty-Ty Washington chose Kentucky over KU and Duke. So that's kind of a downer. But I'm going to end on an upper. That's right. I'm going to end with some excitement. And nobody that listens to this show on a regular basis has any idea where I'm going with this. You have no clue. I don't even know there for a time. I'm wearing my Royals shirt with pride. Maybe not pride, but I'm wearing a Royals shirt to show that I'm not a bandwagon fan. I am a fan of the Royals. Win or lose, I'm not jumping off the wagon. I'm staying on it, baby. And when the Royals are really good and win the World Series again, you can all jump back on. You know who you are. It's fine. You can, you know, when the Chiefs stink again, you know, 15 years after from now when Mahomes is finally done and he's a granddad, okay, and gray and long in the tooth, the Chiefs will stink again, and I'll still wear my Chiefs gear. I'll probably wear the Super Bowl 54 champion shirt because I might be the only Super Bowl they have, and who knows what else. I will wear it with pride, all right? I will cheer on my team no matter how bad or how good they are, and you're welcome to jump off, and I'll kick you off, and you're welcome to jump on if you want to jump on. That's fine. But let me tell you something. Get on this wagon and get on it fast. The Seattle Kraken are coming to the National Hockey League. The Seattle Kraken, who I officially have two shirts of because I love their logo. The Seattle Kraken. I am so excited. I have waited an hour and 5 minutes to get to this point of the show. They have signed their first player. It starts with one. And you release the Kraken. Center Luke Hinman. 21, first player to be announced by the franchise. Their inaugural season will be next year. Everybody knows Luke Hinman. Clearly I do. Plays for the Blainville, I can't pronounce, Armada in the Quebec Major Juniors Hockey League. And he currently has a standard two-way, three-year entry-level contract, blah, 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 blah. The point is, he's going to be the greatest player that ever lived. All right? Remember Luke Hinman. 21, younger brother of Tim Hinman, who was a great British tennis player. I have no idea. Anyway,
he's his son by this point.
Probably so. Luke Hinman, 21. That will go down as one of the greatest trivia questions in sports history. Who was the first player signed by the five-time NHL Stanley Cup champion Seattle Kraken? Luke Hinman. Once you get the train rolling down the tracks, there's no stopping the Kraken. We've signed one player. I got two shirts. I may go get a Luke Hinman jersey if they make one. I'm all in, baby. I am officially Kraken for the Kraken. The Seattle Kraken have their first player. And if you haven't seen their logo, it is kick butt. I love it. I love it. And I wore that shirt yesterday to the fun day. So people saw me wearing it yesterday. Probably don't have any idea why, but that's what I was wearing. I've got this short sleeve shirt I got, really cool, bright colors. And my oldest son goes, didn't you already have a Kraken shirt? I have six Chiefs shirts. What's your point?
Yeah.
I can have more than one. Well, what's their record? They haven't played yet. You bought a shirt from a team that hasn't played yet, Dad? So, I'm ahead of the curve. Come on, man. I'm the first person on the wagon.
Yeah, you're definitely the first person out here on the
wagon. No question.
There's one other person that tweets about it a lot, and I can't remember.
Jackson Snyder mentioned something
Jackson,
about the Kraken.
He's the one.
I told him we got to start a fan club here in North Central Kansas. Apparently, I'm the only one that's really serious about that. So, release the
Jackson
Kraken.
Liked it, but then he heard fan club, and I'm like, I don't know about that.
He's like,
they're still in Seattle.
Wait a minute. Is there a membership fee to that club? It's free until the first game. How's that, Jackson? the Kraken, Seattle Kraken. I'm going to have to go visit Seattle now. I've never been to Seattle. Here it rains all the time. Who cares? Hockey's inside.
It does rain a lot in the Pacific Northwest. It did in Portland anyway.
Listen, hockey's played inside. It ain't going to rain on my parade.
No, not at all.
I'm going to Seattle. I'm going to watch the Kraken. I already got my tickets for their first game. Actually, I don't. I have no idea how to get there. But by golly, probably won't be able to watch them on TV here either. But I can't get them on the radio. Maybe that's what I got to work on. Katy Country 94. Radio home of the Seattle Kraken. I'll get the Kraken on that.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.